Okay, welcome back to QuarterCast. We're here with Washington Social Club. Thank you guys for making the trip up from D.C.
Absolutely. Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah. So there's two of you here.
It's my pleasure. I don't know.
It's definitely all.
Okay, good.
It's my pleasure as well.
We're agreed.
Don't speak for
experiencing a lot of pleasure. That's much good. Pleasure.
So this is just two members of the band, a little intimate interview. So, but just so people recognize your voices, can you just say your name and what you play? And we'll start with you, Martin, please.
Sure. My name is Martin, and I play the human heart. Nice. But no, I sing and I play guitar kind of poorly. When I'm in a good mood, I'm a singer. When I'm feeling like a diva, I'm a vocalist.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I'm Evan, and I play guitar, lead guitar, and, you know, sing some harmonies, and occasionally play a pretty serious tambourine if
nice.
The situation calls for it.
Yeah. Which I think it always does, right?
Most of the time.
In my mind, it does.
Okay, so the biggest thing, the thing we'll start with is you guys have been kind of quiet for a long time. Like, the last record was, what, 2008?
That's right. Yeah, the end of, I think, the very beginning of 2008. And then we made the incredibly smart promotional decision to release the record and then break up for 10 years. Now, for all you bands out there, let me tell you something. This is the move. No one sees it coming.
That's how you get all
record
the label
release,
attention.
Record launch, boom, done.
Dude, year and a half recording.
Later days.
We're done.
Why did the band break up, and then what brought you back together?
I would say, like, we had been together for a fair number of years there.
Hot minute.
And so when we first started, it's kind of almost weird to remember this, but, like, when we first started, we were kind of like a buzzy band. Like, people were really into us, and I think we played, like, 8 shows, and we had, like, label interest and all this nonsense that used to go on. And I think that put a lot of pressure on the band in a lot of ways. And even though we had an enormous amount of fun doing a lot of it, I think there was just a lot of expectation that, yeah, just generally put pressure on the band. And then you spend 6 years in a van with people, and, you know, it was just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that sums it up pretty damn well, I think.
Okay.
Because, yeah, there was a lot of pretty crazy things happening very quickly,
yeah.
You know, where it went from kind of 0 to 60. And, you know, we had kind of high-powered management in New York that was doing a lot of big talk with, you know, major labels and all sorts of stuff. And it wasn't as though there was nothing happening. There were things that were happening that were evidencing that there was certainly some possibility that things were going to happen very fast. So, like Mari said, it was just, I think it set an unbelievable amount of pressure and this idea that it had to go really large.
Yeah, or else it wasn't really a success.
Yeah.
Like, if it didn't... Yeah, it was... Yeah.
Like, you remember, like, there was... I think it was TBT, like, a really good indie label or two that were, you know, throwing out some numbers and some... Basically, some, you know, some offers. And I think because of how skewed our perspective was because of the management and how quickly things were... Things just happening so fast, it wasn't, like, exciting to have, like, this a good indie label, you know, having interest. There was a number of them, and it wasn't like it was like, oh, shit, you know,
yeah.
You gotta jump all that fucking TBT or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. It was just like, well, you know, we were kind of listening to our management, which was, you know, managing bands like Good Charlotte and whatever,
yeah.
Just
wow.
Like big ass bands,
yeah.
And they were saying no, you know, let's hold out for the big one. So
yeah, and
I think Marty summed it up.
You know, and you're 24 years old, and all this kind of stuff happens. Everything
yeah.
gets really heady,
mm-hmm.
And it stops being about the things it should be about.
Yeah.
You know, it starts being silly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting concept. But actually, could you pull that apart a little more? Because, like, 99.9% of the bands I talk to on here are, like, unsigned. They're kind of, like,
oh, sure.
Tinier bands.
Well, we are both now, so
right.
we're yeah. in good company.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess delve into more of, like, what it was that kind of like turned you off about that. I mean, you talked about a little bit, but just like,
it's what happens is you end up having all this expectation of what you're supposed to achieve. And then it's like the things that you do achieve don't seem as sweet, and you maybe take them for granted. And then you maybe start taking each other for granted and taking the band for granted. Yep. And it's kind of like everything that's happening that's good becomes like, oh, well, that's good, but you know, there's this whole other thing that's supposed, you know, we should be the Killers, or we should be, you know, the White Stripes or something like that. And then, you know, you get, and then the opinions come raining down from various people saying like, oh, are you guys dressing the right way? Are you like all that kind of stuff? Just all that old school label stuff, you know, not even label, like old school industry stuff. And it just wasn't super pleasant. And it, you know, I can say for my own sake, it didn't always make me the most pleasant person either. Cause you know, you get, you're young and you're excited and you know, it's
brain
it's,
is fogged out by various things that are taking into your body on a regular basis.
Oh yeah, there was that too. That was also a piece of it. I was going to say, this is actually the first time Evan and I have been interviewed since together, I think, since a relatively disastrous MTV interview.
Tell me about the story.
Okay, so this is a good, this is like a good encapsulation of what we're trying to say about this whole period. So we were in South by Southwest, and they had hooked up this interview for us that was with an MTV show called Advanced Warning, and it was supposed to be like, you know, the bands to watch out for that are coming. It ends up being that was more warning anyone needed. But anyway, so it was like, so we,
Jim Greer or something. Was
it something. Yeah, that sounds right.
He's a nice guy.
So anyway, so me and Evan decide in our infinite wisdom that the best thing we can do before going into this interview is get super high. I mean, like super just high.
Real high.
Very high.
Dumb.
So like we had
That's
done...
always good for answering questions and being around strangers.
Yeah, totally, right?
Okay, so, on MTV for the first time.
So it gets worse than that. So it gets worse than that because... So we had done interviews like this. Like we had done like normal interviews before. So we thought we knew what was going on. So we get there, and this is like fucking legit shit. Really like they good. Have like the lights, and like you can't even see the interviewer because he's sitting slightly behind the lighting rig. So you're kind of blind to him, and you're sitting like legit. This black background and super. So anyway, I'll send
that
you the.
That's scary if you're sober.
It's terrifying. It was a crew. There's a whole crew. There's like two cameras. The whole thing. Yeah. So I'll send you if you want. I'll send you a link to the interview because the interview is me and Evan. Sitting there like clearly on drugs, like no mistake about that, and Olivia smoking cigarettes, which tells you how long ago this was, smoking cigarettes, and Randy just talked the entire time. He's the only one who had the wherewithal to speak. Like I was literally just like,
thank god
you can't see me, but I'm shaking and rocking.
He's doing
back
the wide-eyed shaking.
Weird to see that kind of like just glazed over and like smiling, just like, you know, like, but Randy
kind of laid it down.
He did.
Thank
God. He handled it. But yeah, like it was, I mean, I don't know what would have happened if Randy wasn't there.
Another thing about that was another. So the cameras also followed us during the day, and I almost got a tattoo because I was like, what are we going to do with these cameras? And I was like, okay, what if I go take them and I'll get a tattoo with the cameras? And I was there, and we were in the tattoo shop, and the tattoo guys were like, can't fucking bring those cameras in here. So the only reason I don't have a tattoo is because those guys had a no camera policy.
I totally forgot.
And I have
about
no
that.
Idea to this day how I was planning on paying for that.
Like, what that's were the you thing.
I
get?
Had no, there was no, I had no credit.
We were definitely on a shoestring band budget.
What were you going to get?
I was going to get the, either the Hitchhiker's Guide dude, like the goofy Hitchhiker's Guide face from the old books, or the Hunter Thompson fist, if you know that, like the knife that comes up
with the knife, and I think like the peyote thing in the
That was, I think it was one of those too.
It's surprising that they wouldn't. I mean,
I know it probably if I'd picked a different shot
or been like, dude, this is like these, you know, it's like MTV cameras, like you might want to consider letting this happen.
Yeah, I think they were they were too cool for school on that, which, you know.
Silliness. Austin.
So I can get buried in the Jewish cemetery. I'm not Jewish, but I can...
But you can do it.
You know, There's still hope.
All right, so things were kind of getting not fun, and so let's get to the good stuff. What brings you guys back together?
It was just like a long, slow emails and, you know, hope you're having a good Christmas kind of stuff, and, you know, and then just eventually I think I got a beer with, and we had kind of stayed in touch most of it, and then I think I got a beer with Olivia sometime in like 2017, and then I hung out with Randy, and I think it was Randy who kind of like was pushing it as far as like, well, let's play, and I was like, okay, let's play, and so then we played, and then it was like, well, we should play a show, okay, let's play a show, and then it was very quickly to like, let's record some new stuff, and then we're kind of just doing it, and I'll tell you what, it's been such a beautiful experience, it really has, to like reconnect with this band and just be playing and having so much fun. I mean, it's so much fun. I don't know what the problem was back in the day, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, now, yeah, that's a great way to say it, because I think now it's just, we all feel very lucky to be able to do this again together, and we are just having a ton of fun, and also just really the writing is coming, I would say, very easily.
Yeah.
At this point, it's just, it's not like we're struggling to come up with ideas. I think it was probably part of the reason why, you know, when we were just getting together and playing and just old tunes and learning old tunes, but then just jamming on, you know, some new stuff, stuff was just kind of just flowing pretty well. It wasn't like we were like, can we come up with new stuff? We just started, you know, we just started writing new stuff, and felt good, and we're, you know, I think just all feeling, there's like all that drama from the past of those expectations and the mismatch of just being young and stupid and high.
Yeah, a lot of that's
kind of settled down, and now it's just like, hey, this is fucking fun.
Super fun.
Let's do this. Of the pressure's off, and
absolutely.
Do you think part of it is just like being older, more like comfortable in who you are? That,
oh sure,
yeah,
definitely.
Sure. Well, let's listen to one of the new songs. This is Dance Us Out. We talked about playing this one. That's good, awesome. Right?
Love it.
All right. So again, that's Dance Us Out, and it's a great one, and it is very dancey. Gotta love it.
That's right.
So talk to me specifically about writing that song. Was that one of the first ones that you kind of did when you got back together?
Or? I don't know if it was one of the first ones. I think what was really cool about that song is that was, I think it was an instrumental that Randy had. Randy's getting a lot of play.
Shout out to Randy.
Shout out to Randy. Randy's a randipulator. love to O-Town. Gotta give her love too. But yeah, so he had a he had this instrumental that he sent around, and he was just like, I really like this. And it just like immediately kind of clicked with me. So I laid down a little bit of a demo vocal, and then we learned the instrumental, and then Evan and Olivia came and added vocals to what I was doing. And it just like progressed so organically and so well that, I don't know, I think it's my favorite one of the four, just because it was so easy. I love Mayfair too. Mayfair was Evan's instrumental. It's also beautiful. Don't want to play too many favorites here.
So with the instrumental, because I thought that the background vocals in the song were like really interesting, kind of like very listenable, but kind of like off the wall. So that wasn't part of the instrumental then, was it? Or was
No. Okay. So basically it was like he had a sketch of the song, and then I put down like a sketch, sort of a sketch of those vocals. And then I think we started learning it and we would sing it to there. And then a lot of the like final vocal stuff just came together when we recorded it with Matt. So I just kind of like lay down, you know, my thing, and then these guys come and just kind of do, you know, whatever they feel on top. And we've been doing it for long enough that we have a really good sense of what goes, of everyone has, you know, doesn't really need to be arranged, kind of self-arranges pretty much.
Kind of know where where your part will be, your vocal part. Like I kind of know where my if I'm going to put a harmony down, I know it's, you know, kind of where it should sit in the register with Marty and Olivia's vocals. And so I think it kind of just, it's pretty easy when we get to the point where we're recording, just to like, that's how, I mean, Bigger Than Your Boyfriend, that record was similar. Like I don't think we wrote a lot of the harmonies and backup vocals until we were
that
like
was all just in the room.
Roger's crazy dungeon of a studio in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But that's we kind of wrote them on the spot.
The dungeon. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So is that how the process kind of works? Is someone will bring a pretty finished idea and then you take it from there?
It really depends. Some of the songs, sort of. There's this, the way we've been working now is like sometimes either, you know, you got instrumentals, Randy has instrumentals that I'll put vocals to. Mm. Sometimes I'll have sort of a little bit more fleshed out stuff that then we'll work out. I think those are the sort of the main ways that it's going.
The like you know, sometimes you'll have like, you know, Marty will have a song that he's been sitting on, like the kind of like the, you know, with the bones and the vocal hooks and some in the lyrics, like just sort of just acoustic Marty and his acoustic that he, you know, been sitting on for quite a while, and then it'll come in and we'll just flesh it out together. And other times with, you know, a song like Dance This Out or like Mayfair off the new EP, one of us will bring in the instrumental and then hand it over to Marty and have him come up with the, you know, the primary like vocal hooks and melodies and lyrics, and then we'll add our vocals on top of that. And nice.
So for this song, did you add things on in the studio when you were recording it, or
we kept it? So one thing, my God, here it is again. Randy. Randy had this philosophy for this. So our last record, Bigger Than Your Boyfriend. So we have two old records, right? Mm-hmm. The first one was like really pretty bare bones. It was like, it's very like not a lot's on there. So then we kind of like almost overcorrected, and the second record is a lot.
Yeah, that's like, a very full.
It's very, very like full layered record, tons of guitars. We have bells and shit. There's a lot on that record. And it sounds really cool. But Randy kind of had an idea of like, let's strip this back to like the live band for this recording. So there wasn't a ton of overdubs. I mean, like we did a little bit of solos, and, you know, I recorded my lead vocal in my house, you know, just like your standard doubled vocal. And then those guys did their vocals. And there was maybe, I think we did some hand claps and some stuff like that.
A little sauce.
And I really, really like that approach because it keeps it really honest, and it keeps you from going insane in the studio, which is nice.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to try to write, and because it's like too expensive to do that these days anyway. Not go in totally prepared, you know?
Oh, it's so true. Yeah. And like, God, we spent so much time.
Oh my gosh.
On that last one, like we were recording that thing for like a year and a half.
It was a long,
long. Not like for a solid. I mean, like, you know, we'd go in and then 2 months later,
the whole pack. It was That's the still a long time.
Was protracted though. And crazy for that life, for Bigger Than Your Boyfriend. Gosh.
So lyrically, Dance Us Out is kind of interesting because it's like a fun song, but you know, the opening lyrics, you get a big sense of anxiety, or at least I do. You get a big sense of anxiety from it. Yeah,
you got it, Kelsey. That's what that song's all about. So I'm someone who, I think, like a lot of creative people, I have a shit ton of anxiety, and that's what that song is about. It's about, like, I think in the best of times, I think, you know, I would worry about everything, but we don't live in the best of times. We live in a pretty crazy time. So that song is kind of about what's wrong with me. Why is this? Why is everything always so tense and so tight? And then at the same time, this sort of like little bit tongue in cheek thing of like, let's dance this out. Like, is that possible? You know, in 2 minutes, but you got it. That's great that came through.
No, it was very clear.
That's very awesome. Clear. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little more about writing the lyrics for that? Like, I mean, apart from that general idea, were there specific ideas that you were working through?
Usually I'll get the first line of something. I think that came right away. I think the why am I so afraid to lose my stupid way, I get halfway out the door before I'm halfway in the grave. I had that. And then I started going into the, so I knew it was going to be Dance This Out. I had that line, because I think I've had that lyric. It's actually sort of ripped off 30 Rock. You ever watched 30 Rock?
Yeah, but I don't know what that's referencing. Like, where's that from?
Liz Lemon is like, in one episode, she's like, I think I have to dance this out, or something like that. Like, she says something.
That sounds like a Liz Lemon line. Maybe like
not exactly that, but it's like close to that. So I had that line in my head of dance this out. And then I got into the whole, so it was like that first line, and it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to get to dance this out, how am I going from like, I'm halfway in the grave to dance this out? It's like, okay, well, what would you do? Well, you know, maybe let your hips go, maybe take a micro, maybe microdose, little drug reference. Some things change. And that's how it got there. But yeah, it's cool because it was like less than, I love it because it's such a concise little song too. It's like just, it's like a little bit over 2 minutes, and we got a lot going on in there. So
yeah. Very cool. And let's see. So you recorded that with Matt from Moptown, who I've had on the show.
Matt Leffler-Schulman, the best.
Yeah, nice. He really is. He's a good guy. Really nice. So can you talk to me about like recording with him? And I think, did you record, you said you recorded at home some as well?
Yes, we did. So we laid down. I'm sorry, you want to rock it? Take 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think we went in, it was a little bit of a different approach with Matt, just because we had, you know, we knew we were going to track instruments as much as we could with Matt, but we also knew that we might track vocals. And at that point, I think when we first started, we were actually thinking that we might track backing vocals and pretty much all the vocals. Like, we would just go in with Matt and just fire out the basic tracks, and then just kind of assemble the vocals. And it sort of worked out like that. But then, at least for backups, when we started working with Matt, Matt had some mics that were just fantastic, and some vocal
and
sounds.
The space, and the space. His ears, like,
yeah,
a whole...
a great ear. And the space. What was the second space called? There was the first
studio. One was Moose House.
Moose, yeah.
Second one was Magpie. The Magpie.
Yeah, that's so been a lot there. Of good recordings.
It's like
there.
The Jawbox studio, yeah. I think.
That room, that main room, and that's in the Magpie space. Oh my
god!
Yeah,
you got some great vocals.
Man. Like the just like, and also for, I ended up recording some guitar leads and I think some guitar rhythm tracks there as well. That room was just badass. Like, the sound in there was just crazy. And I was, we were playing through, you know, I played through some old 1950s, 1391s, silver tones. And, between that and my Fender in that room, I was just like, I never want to record guitar anywhere else. This is freaking
really
amazing.
Nice.
You can't not get a good sound out of it.
So,
what was the idea of doing the vocals separate? That's kind of interesting to me. Not separate, but like later.
So I have in my little dungeon in my house. I have a pretty good setup, and also my creative process is very like not exactly time consuming, but I would drive anyone else crazy if they were trying to follow it. Like if I was like, okay, hold up, I wanna punch this part because I think I can, you know, squeal slightly better there. Like no one would indulge that, but I like to do that stuff. So I have a nice enough setup that for vocals, I couldn't record like any other instrumentation there. I don't have that kind of capability, but for vocals, which all you really need is like one nice dead room and a decent mic. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much why I did it that way. So I wouldn't drive everyone insane.
And I think that was, I mean, I understand that 100%.
Yeah, because you feel vocals. Bad after a while, yeah, because, being like, yeah, okay, hold up. Yeah. Like, that sounded fine to me. Yeah, I know, but...
And sometimes you want to do it, and then, like, you know, with lead vocals, and then, you know, a couple days later, you want to do it again, and maybe tweak it a little bit. A couple days later, maybe you want to, you know, so, like,
yeah.
I think it, I mean, personally, I really think it worked out great having Marty, you know, kind of in his own element with the lead vocals, and then the final product, you know, we were just all really happy with, and the quality of the sound and also the takes. And I think it was, I mean, this was a kind of astonishingly low stress recording process, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if there were any, the angst level, I don't even know if it was there at all.
Yeah.
I can't really remember any point where any of us were stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bigger than your boyfriend, that was a long process. Like, would you guys consider yourself like a very meticulous band that way?
No. Bigger than your boyfriend, we also started from like, we started kind of from nothing. Like, if you remember, like when we first started recording that record, like we had like the elements of those songs, and those songs like really developed as we went, because we were also playing them live, so it was a whole thing. I wouldn't say we're necessarily meticulous. I think that took for a long time, just because we were developing the songs from such a nascent state to like this, and I was really keen with that album to get it so it did not sound thin, like, because I thought our first one kind of sounded thin. So it was kind of like a Three Little Bears? Is that the story? What's the one with the porridge?
Yeah. The Goldilocks. Goldilocks and Three Bears.
The bears weren't little. Goldilocks was little. Yeah, so it was kind of like Catching Looks was a little bit too dry. Bigger Than Your Boyfriend is maybe a little overstuffed. And I think this time we really got it like just the right amount of sort of, and really like leaning on the band, on the live band as the core element. Yeah.
So that's the appropriately temperatured porridge.
That's the third one.
Yeah. Feels like that.
What happens at the end of that? Does she die? She probably dies in like the original one. Right. It's probably like she gets killed.
Yeah. The way I heard it, she like runs away, you know, because they come back and like, what the fuck are you doing? You're eating our porridge. Yeah, you're breaking our chairs. Like, get out.
Is it just like, listen, I found the correct temperature. Can you let me stay? These are... You don't know how long. This was such a process. Like, she never gets into, like, what's going on there.
No, anyway. I'm sure in the original one, it's, like, some tragic thing, though. Oh, they yeah, always they are.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But anyway, so, let's see. So, yeah, what was it like getting back to recording after taking some time? Like, did you guys find your footing right away, or was it kind of like a little bit of a process.
I was nervous, but we did. It just went off really well. We the other thing we did that we had not, I don't think we'd ever done before, at least we didn't do it with Bigger Than Your Boyfriend, was we recorded live, but with a click. And that was really cool because we could go back. It's like we did two takes, right, to a click, and then we would jam parts out as well. Also to the click, so then we could go back and sort of like, okay, this take is perfect, but this one part of the verse, it'll maybe a little shaky. Well, we can take this thing from these jam parts and just kind of swap it in really easily. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was nervous about it. I was like, I also had like super, like I had no expectations going in. I was just like, cool, we're going to record, whatever. But I think it's come out as good as anything we got.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I agree. We weren't... just going back to the low stress kind of feeling, it just didn't, I don't know, it just felt like we had kind of ultimate control and we were going to do it the way we wanted to do it. You know, one other comment about the recording of Bigger Than Your Boyfriend over the marathon year and a half or whatever the hell it was that we were also like our, I think some of it was, I don't want to call him out, but so we had a producer at the time who was an awesome dude, and he's got an incredible ear.
Genius. Fucking, legit genius.
His tones and his ear and his vision. I mean, he's just fantastic. But we also had a little bit too much fun partying with him.
Yeah, he liked to party too.
He liked to party pretty
and
hard.
So everyone liked to party,
yeah. Right?
Which, like, as opposed to like we weren't going in there with, you know, just trying to party, and he was like, all right, guys, let's get this shit together. No, he was like, let's party and listen to a couple Yes records, like, for whatever, yes, for like an hour, and then that. Maybe we'll get in. It'll be like, all right, whatever, dude, let's listen to some Yes records.
And if any of you all out there know Yes,
sorry. Right. First of all, I'm sorry.
That's hilarious that, you know, because your band is so different than Yes, so it's kind of hilarious.
He could not be, that was kind of his thing. Like, there was a method to it. Yeah, there was more madness than method, but there was method to it, which was like one of his things would be like he'd record with you for a while and then he'd want everyone to stop and listen to something totally fucking
like a palate cleanser.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. Exactly. So, but the thing is, that can be really cool for a young band, all that stuff. But especially like now, we don't need that shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like we know what we want it to sound like. We know. And we have the band to back it up. It's also not something that needs to be massaged. Like, we can go in there and plug and do it. Yep. So.
Yeah, get the work done. Now, were you guys in other bands during the hiatus, or was it just kind of like music was on the back burner?
I had a couple projects that were, you know, intermittent, played, you know, handfuls of shows here and there. One was called the Cedar Fires, which was just two of us, and kind of like an ethereal, sort of Baltimore sounding, like somewhere between like Beach House and Wye Oak and bands like that. But, you know, a couple intermittent projects here and there. And I know, you know, Olivia. She was the one who was really consistently out there touring and putting out records
with
stuff.
Her band, Olivia and the Mates.
Olivia and the Mates, yeah.
That sounds great. Familiar.
Yeah, they play around a lot.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out and make and listen to that too.
Yeah.
Okay. And so this I guess it's an EP, right? It's four songs.
EP, yeah. We're gonna call it an EP.
So this EP, do you feel like it's a departure from what came earlier? I mean, you talked about like the fullness of the sound and whatnot, but
I think it's very much Washington Social Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's not a jazz odyssey.
No,
that's coming. When we run out of ideas, believe me, the Yes record is coming.
Yeah, right.
But no, I think it's very much us. But I think it's kind of like it's like it's coming to focus. That's how I would put it. Like, I think I think it's like very much the same band and sort of the same sound, but it's much more concise. And I don't know. I think it's great. I mean, what a surprise, right? I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It doesn't feel like to me like a departure, you know, like we're on some sort of magical journey into, you know, wherever, but the cosmos or something. It feels like a WSC record. It feels like it's got the same energy and the same kind of undercurrent, the same kind of general character. But it also feels like it's a little bit, like Marty's, you know, saying, it feels like it's a little bit more focused, a little bit more to the point, kind of. And also, and then there's, I think there are a couple other sounds that are coming out that are a little bit, maybe expanding the sound a little bit. It sounds like WSC, but maybe with a little bit of extra something in to color it in a little bit more.
And I love that we did that without having to be like, okay,
let's go for this.
This is going to be a piano song. You know, I like that we did that as a band is the thing I'm psyched about.
Yeah,
definitely.
I did notice, like, looking at your overall projects, I did notice that there's quite a variety of sounds, really. Like, there's some slower piano stuff, or keyboard, probably. So, I was wondering, like, is that a result of different people bringing in almost finished songs?
Like, or? Specifically, like, Bigger Than Your Boyfriend, right?
Has its yeah, that's stuff. That's the one.
That was very much, like... I was hell bent that we were gonna put a lot of frickin' sounds on every song.
Oh, so everything was very intentional on that.
Yeah, on that one it was more intentional. Like, we brought in keyboards. I mean, that was the big thing that we did.
Yeah.
And that was really cool, and I think it worked out really well, but I don't know if we need that kind of thing now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I wanna next year I really want to record more. Definitely. I think we probably will.
Yep.
But I don't see us changing the sort of what we did last time. I don't think it's necessary to try something different, at least not yet.
So, you know. Is that a no as far as the pan flute idea?
Yeah, the Glockenspiel is making the record. So that's... You can do a pan flute, but
a little disappointed to hear it.
You have to be shirtless. There's no wearing a shirt when you play the pan flute. That's for sure.
What is the optimal outfit for pan flute?
Oh. Well, it's hooven.
Yes.
Okay. There's definitely hooves involved, and you kind of have to, like, maybe a bow and arrow too.
A laurel wreath for your.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, this is all. Right up my alley, so yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah, like some...
So you're good to go.
Have you seen Dark Crystal?
The original movie? Or...
No,
I saw one episode of the new one. I like it.
All right, I'll tell you what. It's my everything right now.
Yeah, it's so good.
That, there's definitely there's pan flute in that.
Oh, yeah? Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. I haven't gotten to the pan flute yet, but now I'm extra sold.
Yeah, it's good. go watch Dark Crystal out there, kids.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Fantastic.
Highly recommended. You know what's crazy about that show is it's so the quality of the film has changed so much since the 80s movie that the puppets look like almost like
humans. Well, I'll tell you what, we can change the topic of this whole thing very rapidly. There's a whole making of that you can watch after you watch the thing. Go back and make the making of. And what they did was they add... CGI, there's light CGI
on the faces. That's what I'm seeing. Really? Yeah.
Like, very, very light. Because originally, and I'm sorry for the tangent, but this is important.
Very important.
Originally, they pitched an animated show, and Netflix was like, we want puppets. And then they tried to do half CGI, half puppets, and Netflix was like, can you just do all puppets? So they did all puppets, and then they had their CGI people just... like lightly touch the faces so that they have a little more expression.
Ah, that's what I'm looking at then.
Shit is fire.
Yeah, that's with crazy. You though, like, cause like it's the, nuts. It kind of pulls you in because at first you're like, oh, okay. They're, you know, very aware of the puppets. But then once you start to kind of like, just give it its due, you do notice there's, like you said, it's almost human-like and there's a lot of expression and a lot of, I don't know.
These puppets get into all sorts of shit. They're like having sex. Well, I don't think they have sex, but they make out.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. But
this is an adult puppet.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like you're watching it and you're like, oh, that's funny. You're like, I'm all
you
in.
You care
all
about
in.
These puppets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're.
But much like the Washington Social Club's new records.
Yeah, so that's it for Dark Crystal cast. Let's...
Dark Crystal, you know, went back to their original premise, slightly improved. And that is what I think we did.
Beautiful.
Dark Crystal advance.
That was such a good segue. I want to end it now, but we have so much more to talk about.
It's cool. Maybe just stick it at the end. Yeah, we'll get back to Dark Crystal. Copy, paste, and great.
So what's the reception been? I mean, you guys had kind of a good following going and then, you know, took the long break and...
Reception's been really good. So we played 3 shows so far. We sold out our first 2 shows.
Excellent.
And then we just played with these awesome young bands, on the main stage of the Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Played with Bad Moves and the O6, which were really
great. Oh, O6 has been on. My band's pretty much friends with them.
Oh,
I'd
yes.
Say.
They
well,
were
not
fantastic.
Pretty much friends with them.
Yeah. I have heard, I'll tell you what, I've heard from a lot of people that they said this was our best thing that we've ever done, which was really, really, really sweet. and I hope they're being honest. But, yeah. You know, so I'd say the reception has been as good as we could have hoped for.
I would agree. I think my experience has been the same, that people are, you know, receiving it very, very warmly, and Excellent. They're very excited about it. So I think we're pretty happy with what we're seeing so far. Yes.
And this won't be up for a while, so I don't know about plugging specific dates, but do you have a lot of shows lined up for the future as well? Or
So we are playing at the Smithsonian on December 5th. That's going to be like a weird one. That's going to be like an acoustic show. Mm-hmm. We're playing like in there. They have like this like ballroom thing. I actually don't exactly know where it is, but it's like the Smithsonian American Art Museum. It's like not the main Smithsonian, but anyway. So we're doing like an acoustic show in December.
That's wild. So actually, this will probably be up by then. So check that out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And then next year we'll probably get into, we definitely want to like, we don't want to do like a little bit of regional stuff where it's like, you know, maybe Baltimore, Philly, Brooklyn,
yeah,
Charlottesville, Blacksburg, Richmond, like those sorts of just, you know, a little bit of regional kind of vibe.
Yeah. Nice. And then get back in the studio, and we've got a lot of, I mean, I think right now that's the thing that we're most excited about, is just that we've got a lot of like, you know, rough kind of idea.
Oh, yeah.
Idea.
Like tunes. I really want to get. Yeah. Like I cannot wait to record again.
And then there's also a couple old ones that we never recorded.
That's right.
Long there, you know, and that's some of these songs that we're excited to get in and.
You think you might pull those back out? Yeah.
Oh yeah, a couple of them.
A couple of them. Sure. Yeah.
But like Randy just sent me an instrumental. Yep. That one. I'm cutting the demo on that this weekend. I'm really excited about that song.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right now we've got, I mean, really, we could probably do with the songs that we have that are kind of in embryonic stages, just idea stages that we're excited about. We think we've got at least another EP that if we, you know, did nothing but just focus on these songs for a little while, then we could have another EP in a matter of months of, you know, 5 or 6 songs, but we'll see how many we end up getting. But we're not short of ideas right now, I don't think.
That's a good place to be. Yeah, right. So I also want to talk about, because I spend most of my time here in Baltimore, mm-hmm. so it's good to get a DC band on. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you about like your sense of what's going on musically with the DC scene at the moment versus like when you
first
guys
2001?
Were... Yeah.
Oh, let's talk.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's major changes.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, yeah, so... When we started in like 2001, 2002, it was legitimately difficult, not being affiliated with Discord. It was legitimately difficult to find other bands to play with who were close enough. I mean, literally, like, there was like one or two bands. Like, we started playing with the Dance Party. I mean, back in the day, we were playing with like Carl Sonics and Sounds of Kaleidoscope and those bands, but they really weren't like us, really. They were that whole garage thing that was going on, and it was great, but it wasn't really what we were doing. And then there was this band called The Dance Party in DC for a while, but it was just like there just wasn't a lot going on. And I remember when the Rock and Roll Hotel opened, that other clubs in town were sort of like nervous. They were like, oh, there's not enough room for another rock club. And now you have like the Anthem and New Street Music Hall, and you know, three other, there's DC9, and it's just, there's so much more going on as far as venues. There's so many bands. Like, Paste Magazine did this thing of, like, the 15 indie bands from DC to watch. Like, this was like 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And, like, you couldn't have found, again, leaving out the Discord thing, couldn't have found 15 indie bands when we were starting up. Well, you probably could have. I could get yelled at for that, but you really couldn't, trust me. Like,
it was tough. Non-Discord bands in DC back then were tough to come by, for sure.
Yeah, I just, for our listeners, I want to apologize because I feel like I always come back to Discord type stuff, because to me it's such a fascinating legacy. So question for you, whenever I interview a DC band, I always bring up like fucking Fugazi, and I'm mad at myself for doing it.
Let's talk about it.
But anyway, so my question would be like, so how do you kind of, what's the word? So how do you like kind of grapple with that legacy, or is it not even
really
anything
tough
that you worry about?
I'll give you two. It's I'm sorry, do you mind?
Go.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, so... I'll give you two. Well, first off, nothing but love and respect for the people in those bands.
Oh, like, yeah.
Geniuses, great, incredible, all that stuff. All that being said, it was always tough being a band in DC without any affiliation. And also keep in mind, you can't have any affiliation. It's a closed... Discord is a closed... They're not taking new applicants. No. You know what I mean? They're sort of... They do what they do, and that's great.
They've built a thing, and it's built...
They've built a thing, and it's theirs, and that's great. But, you know, I'll give you two examples of the kinds of things that would drive me crazy back in the day. I think we played a show at the Black Cat one time, and we didn't sell it out. And this was the main stage. We didn't sell it out, but it was good. It was like, you know, we had like 600-700 people in there. It was a good show. And the next day, the Washington City paper had a picture of Ian MacKay, and it said, "Why is the DC scene dead?"
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And I was just like, fuck, not Discord.
No. All no, right, he didn't write that. I mean, yeah.
But like, fuck that mentality, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then, so then we had our CD release show for Bigger Than Your Boyfriend. We did it at the 930 Club. Like, we were playing them. That was our club at the end there in 2007, 2008. And we did, do you remember, like, you know the Onion AV Club?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so remember, there was a time there where they were doing local editions of The Onion.
Oh, I didn't know that,
yeah,
but
it
okay.
It didn't last very long, but they were doing it. So they were doing, cool. Like, it was like the AV Club, but, like, just for DC.
Yep.
And so we did an interview to promote our show. And we were like, you know, come on out. We have, what was it? Dance Party, Middle Distance Runner, I think, were the band, something like that. And I was like, you know, this is, you know, we're releasing a self-released record at the 930 Club. You know, that's pretty cool. The next page was an interview with Mary Timoney, who's also great.
Yeah, right.
But they asked her about the DC scene, and she was like, DC scene is dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not since Ian and those guys stopped doing stuff. There is no DC scene. So you can imagine being a young person and constantly being told that the thing you're doing isn't happening.
Yeah. No, that's so frustrating.
Yeah, that can get...
There was some angst. I mean, I remember just being like...
That stuff drove me crazy.
You know, it was definitely like... You know, particularly the city paper was just like always... Like, you know, the Post, to you know, was awesome.
The Post was awesome. And you know what? The city paper is probably awesome. You know, these are individual people.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not organizations,
yeah.
But...
And they, and you know,
it was a fucking drag.
It was. I mean, they would just flat out ignore what we were doing. I mean, and a lot of those Black Hat shows, I mean, there was a ton of them that were sellouts that were, you know, after the show that you mentioned. I mean, we played so many times, and I think most of them at a certain point there for a couple of years straight were sold out. And yeah, still nothing from the city paper, just like just ignoring it. And but it, times have certainly changed. Now there's a lot of. There's a lot more bands in DC. A lot of them are indie bands. And also, you know, just as one little quick thing, I remember Randy sent out an email right before our cat show, a couple days before. It was like on the whatever things to do for the weekend or whatever in the city paper. It was a little blurb, a write up about us.
Yeah,
and Randy
that
made
was
a joke
so
in the email.
Awesome.
He was just like, he's like, did the fucking city paper just give us a, you know, glowing
right.
recommendation for coming check out our show.
So thank you, Washington City Paper.
Yeah, right.
We love you.
Yeah,
you know, it's all about, you know, people, not mm-hmm. not you know, necessarily like, you know, labels or I mean, not you know, outlets.
Yeah,
it's more about just the people that work there. But that was frustrating. But it's awesome. You know, it's awesome a little bit that DC has sort of mellowed out about all that, like,
yeah.
And just like even
it's almost do you feel it was almost like they wanted the scene to be dead or something. You read some of those articles and it's like
it was,
you know.
Just I don't know what the hell was going on. It was just like, it was kind of like when you talk to a baby boomer who's a drag and they keep telling you about Woodstock. Like, it was the same
exactly
thing.
What
it was just like, oh, were you there at the Last of Gods show? Did you see Q and not you? It's like, no, fuck off. No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't. I'm sure it was great, but like, come on,
but
man.
Let's move
me.
Forward.
You're right.
Help me out here.
Always moving forward. But actually, on a positive note, like, I see stuff about, speaking of the O6, like, the, you know, they got, yeah, they're blowing up and they're promoting
so.
Others on the way. Yeah. So I do feel like, from my observation as an outsider, I do kind of feel like people are realizing that things are happening. Do you feel that
way?
Oh,
I think now it's there's just so much going on that no one thing, you know, controls, you know, that.
I definitely have that sense
for
sure.
I think it's absolutely wide open now. 06 are amazing. I mean, Bad Moves, I don't know if you've heard of them, but
them, I don't know. I'll have to check them out.
They're a great young band. They were just on tour with the Hold Steady for like,
oh wow,
that's 3 months or something.
That's a big one.
Yeah, so
then we've got like interesting bands like Slow Love, you know,
yeah,
like
I love that
awesome them. Like ethereal hip-hop kind of so stuff.
Cool.
Like,
ooh, that sounds
yeah neat. Really cool band.
What's the name again?
Slow Love.
I'll have to check that out.
Who else is out there?
I mean, it's just there's a probably lot. A ton. It's freaking
I'm gonna
cool.
like be driving home and be like, shit, yeah, I didn't say this. But there are a ton of great bands.
It feels very open, and there's just, you know, a lot of new kinds of sounds, and there isn't that kind of old guard kind of feeling about one specific sound that is supposed to be what DC sounds like, you know. So it's nice. It's really, yeah. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, that's good to hear.
And those guys definitely. From Discord are still doing cool things too.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't forget that either.
I can't pronounce the name, but it's a cool
band.
I
think that's what it is. Mestheatic or something.
Mestheatics, is that it?
Okay. I think. Yeah. The listeners call in if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
yeah, so that's really good to hear. I guess, let's see, I guess we can start winding it down unless there's things that I haven't asked you about that you want to like talk about or promote or anything of that nature.
No, just, you know, keep looking out for us, you know, follow us on, you know, we're on Facebook and Instagram and all that fun stuff. And yeah, we'll be at the Smithsonian on the 5th, and yeah, we'll be playing more shows, and I think we'll definitely be doing some Baltimore shows in 2020 as well.
I'll have to catch those out.
And yeah.
Now, wait, I'm actually, that's something that I'd like to ask about. So what the Smithsonian show, it's at the museum? It's just, okay, that's so interesting.
It's on our Facebook page. It's at this thing called, I only say that because it's like a specific part of the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. It's not like the main one. I think it's in the U.S. Patent Building.
Oh, that's wild.
But they do this thing called L-U-C-E, but I don't know how you pronounce it. I feel so embarrassed. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Luce or Luce or it's the Luce. We're going to call it Luce.
Yeah. Sure.
Luce Foundation does these things. Oh, in collaboration with Hometown Sounds. Do you know Hometown Sounds? Mm-hmm. They are also a podcast all about DC music.
Okay.
So those are the guys that sort of put on this acoustic series. And apparently, I haven't actually checked it out yet, but apparently the space is very beautiful, and it's like all marble, and it's like you're surrounded by all this art. And the other thing about the show is, as a band, we're going to pick a piece of art from their collection, and they're going to do a short presentation on that piece of art, and then we play.
Oh, that's
so
really
cool. So it's
kind
of a little, and it's also at like, the cool thing for us is it's like at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Nice.
So like, I put on our Facebook page, like, do you want to come to a social club show and not be hungover?
Right.
Here's your chance.
Bring your kids.
Yeah, bring your kids, right? Bring your kids. Totally. We don't rock for the children. As long as, but bring your kids and enjoy us in the daylight, presumably sober.
Yeah, presumably. That's up to you.
We'll see about that one.
All right. So I end the show always asking like bands the same kind of question. Cool. So how about so what advice would you have for like a new band or a band starting out? Just general advice. Let me start with you.
Let's see. Well, I would say, you know, focus on writing, and not so much on, you know, this idea about getting into this venue or that venue. Just make sure that you have something that you feel really, really good about. And if that takes a long time to get there, then do that. I think a lot of bands will just sort of throw together songs and, you know, just, you know, want to just get out there and play shows together with a group of people and just throw together some songs. But I'd say just kind of slow it down and just make sure that what you're doing feels really good creatively, and you can always play shows. Be patient on getting into the venues you want to get into. Just focus on your craft and focus on the product, your art, and make sure that you feel really good about it. And then you can get out there and worry about what venue to play and what bands to play with and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's good. Take it one piece at a time. Yep. All right.
I would say, especially when you're young, make it your life. You know, there's a window in your life when you can take being in a band, when you can put in the kind of work that it takes to get really good. And, you know, we're really fortunate that we put in that time when we were young, and now we can be older and kind of, you know, be a little bit more mature about what we're doing. But that's because we put in so much work when we're young. So my advice would be, like, if you're gonna do it, don't waste anybody's time. Fucking do it.
Cut those teeth.
You know, don't do it casually.
Yeah,
when you're young, do it.
Right.
Jump in.
Dive in.
You know? That's great.
That'd be my advice.
Well, thank you so much, Washington thank Social you, Club. This was a blast.
Thanks, Woo! Quartercast, thank you.
Yeah.
Right on.
All right, all right. That was the Washington Social Club. I really like talking to them. Oftentimes, after I interview a band, I feel like I could have done a whole nother show with them, talked to them for a whole nother hour. But I really felt that with these guys. We had a lot of fun. I hope that comes through. I really hope you'll check out the recording. They have a single that'll be coming out soon. I don't know the exact details on that. But stay on top of their Facebook page, stay on top of their Bandcamp page, and you won't miss it. I'm looking forward to hearing it. All right, so in Santa Labrada news, I just want to let you know real quick that our next show is going to be February 1st at Slash Run down in D.C. I'll update you with more details as we get closer to that. It's still a little far away. Other than that, this is going to be the last episode of the year. I hope you all have wonderful holidays. Thank you so much for listening. This year, I feel like we were very active. I got to meet a lot of great people and a lot of great bands, and it was so great to share that with you. It really means a lot that you're listening. So with the holidays coming up in the new year, I'm going to take a little hiatus, a little break. So I'm not sure exactly when the next episode is going to drop, but in the meantime, I have a favor to ask of you. If you all could send me some band recommendations, stuff that you've heard, stuff that you like, that would be super helpful. You can send it to corridorcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on the Facebook page. You can also reach me through the website, corridorcast.wordpress.com. But yeah, that would be a huge help. And other than that, just let people know about the show that you think might be interested. This is like a completely word of mouth thing. Like, I don't do advertising. I don't do anything of that nature. So this is just like a record of what we're doing, and we want to keep it going forward in the new year. And I really appreciate everyone who takes the time to listen. That being said, have great holidays. Have a great, happy, and healthy new year. And I'll catch you soon. Bye.